3, 2, 1. Should be fine.
Yeah.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Weekly Spaceflight. This is The Great Show with Marlon.
Hello. In today's show, we'll talk about a few things. We had a beautiful launch this morning, which we live streamed as well on our YouTube channel. Of AskXM8, it was a successful launch. We'll talk about that a little more and what SiriusXM is and what those satellites offer. As well, we'll talk about Sirius 22 and what the few experience and cargo is on board. And yeah.
So, and as well as a couple of days back, we had the Falcon 9 birthday, or the maiden flight in 2010. So we'll just talk about a bit.
Happy birthday, Falcon 9.
Right, happy birthday, and we'll just talk about, you know, what the Falcon 9 does, what it means, and stuff. Yeah. So I hope that you'll have fun. And let's just start with SXM-8. So SXM-8 is a regular customer payload that was carried out by Falcon 9 earlier this morning, actually. And the SXM satellite Sirius is actually a radio satellite series for the radio company called SXM, I'm sorry. And so they are going, the satellite will go into a geostationary orbit, or I think it is already. And so the second stage boosted the apogee of the satellite into the geostationary transfer orbit height, and the satellite will do the rest. Yeah, so it was a pretty standard mission. We actually haven't seen a regular customer payload like this in a while. So of course we had Sirius 22, but that
we had at Turksat 5A was the first mission this year, and I think we had Transporter 2, Transporter 1, of course. We only had one Transporter.
Then, but that's not like a regular customer mission.
Yeah, I would say it's a customer mission.
Well, but Turksat 5 was a regular customer mission.
Maybe not Transporter, but yeah, Turksat definitely. And the NRO launch was last year, actually.
I don't think there were that many
launches this year that were not Starlink launches.
No, we had a lot of Starlink launches.
Of course, we had the Dragon launches, but like
The crews,
like really commercial payloads, there were not a lot. They were just like NASA missions. I think was Sentinel 6 this year?
From Vandenberg? No, it was last year.
Was last year already? Okay, that feels like it was yesterday. So yeah, there's not much that happened this year other than Starlink missions, which I have to say, I have to admit, I think they're pretty boring by now. Like, I like to watch them, but it's like there's always the same thing happens, and yeah.
Yeah, I really understand what you're going at. So it's basically just they're sending another batch of 60 satellites up. It's no big deal. But so every time they send those Starlink missions, they expand their their constellation, which is awesome for them. And for every people who don't have good internet access at their homes. And SXM-8 was actually a pretty big satellite, and it was made to replace SXM-3.
Yes,
was it 3?
It replaced SXM-3, which was, I think, in service for 15 years or so. It was had a long service time, and SXM-8 is also expected to last around 15 to 20 years. So yeah, SiriusXM is an American company, actually. I'm not sure, but I think they offer worldwide radio. So they offer radio. They have a lot of different genres, and they have sports, and they have everything. They have like every US sport they broadcast there. And yes, they're in the business for pretty long, and
Yeah, and they actually had a lot of satellites already. They
Yes.
had the FM series, I think. There were about six satellites, and they were all launched on Proton rockets by Roscosmos. And I think they started launching them in 2000 and stopped launching them in 2013, if I'm correct. But yeah, so they're just continuing to grow their satellite constellation. And actually, there was the SXM-7 launch last year, I think it was. So it was basically just the
Yes, it
same, but
was. No, it was
unfortunately,
this year, I think.
was this year?
I'm not sure, but I
Huh.
think it was actually this year.
So, yeah, we can check that right now. And so, oh no, SXM was the second last mission of 2020 for SpaceX.
So,
So there was
okay. Well,
NRL-108 and there
yes,
was last one. So,
NRL-108.
but unfortunately, SXM published soon after that they lost the satellite. I'm not
Yes.
sure why,
I think it was just
but
electronical issues. Like the satellite didn't work. They had no communications. They couldn't control the satellite anymore and gave no frequency, no radio. It just didn't work as satellite.
so it basically broke. And yeah,
Yeah.
that's very unfortunate because those satellites are probably very expensive. And
Yeah, they're
so they
pretty
were
high
actually
tech.
built by yeah, so they were built by a third party company. I'm not sure which one, but there are those certain companies that are building satellites for other companies for them to use. So
So it was built by
SXM,
Maxar, right?
if
Yeah, Maxar.
yes.
Maxar.
So SXM went to Maxwell and asked, "Hey, we want to have those satellites in geostationary orbit, and they're there for radio communication. What can you do about it?" And they're like, "Yeah, we're gonna do that for you." And then they form a contract and stuff. And then SXM is just using them, you know, but they're not actually in the space business involved. So they know how they work, probably.
They developed
They
them, but
know.
they were built by Maxar. So the Maxar
Right.
gave them the technology to survive like orbit and solar radiation and all that stuff. And yeah.
Right. So, and now they're using that those for their yeah, for their radio shows. And I think that's actually pretty cool. That's something we haven't seen really often. Well, it is there, and you always have the capability of just buying your satellites somewhere else. But I feel like they were that capability, that market wasn't that widely used.
Don't we just talk about CRS-22?
Sure. So CRS-22 was the latest commercial resupply mission that was carried out by SpaceX. So it was just the Cargo Dragon, the new Cargo Dragon
So
version.
yeah, it was the 22nd commercial resupply mission for SpaceX and the second of the second contract on of the second round of the contracts, and so also the second mission of Dragon 2, of Cargo Dragon 2 to the ISS. The previous CRS missions were flown on Dragon 1, we know all know it, the one that was berthed by the Canadarm to the station, and so it couldn't automatically dock, and now it's kind of the same as Crew Dragon. It's having the same docking techniques, same docking mechanism. It's pretty much the same, just that it doesn't have abort systems, and I'm not even sure if it, I think it doesn't even have life support systems on board.
So, I think it does to some extent. Of course, it doesn't
Yeah,
have
like
the
air and
like a
that stuff,
toilet
like
and stuff.
pressurization and that stuff, but
Right. And
yes.
probably air conditioning
Or
and
maybe they keep the air pressure a little bit lower than when crews on board. Maybe.
well, I have no idea actually.
Yeah.
So they still pressurize the capsule. So as far as I understood, the capsule is actually pretty much the same. There's just a couple of vital things
So yeah, it's
missing
like the
that would be
same.
necessary for crewed space flight.
Yeah, the pressure module is same. It's just the cover on the outside. There are no windows in the cover. There, so in thermal insulations, in thermal insulation blankets, there are no cover, no openings for the windows, and the Super Draco mounts or shrouds are covered because there are no Super Dracos, because we don't need an abort system for cargo. And it's just unnecessary weight, which could be used in cargo. And I mean, yeah, the triggers are pretty heavy. I mean, engines are always heavy, and so you can have a lot of things, maybe more inside, or a lot of weight in the trunk. So let's just come to the trunk. What was in the trunk of this mission?
Well, so we had an interesting payload in the trunk. So just for you that may don't know, the trunk is basically an addition to the capsule, and that is not pressurized. So there are some harder, more robust payloads in there. For example, solar panels. So the Dragon carried out two
Yeah,
new
so
roll-out
it's
solar
actually a pretty
panels.
smart way of using the solar panels. So they have the trunk halfly covered in solar panels, and the other half is covered in radiators. So you want the solar panels to face the sun to generate power, and you want the radiators not to face the sun, because you want to get the air out and want to cool down with the radiators. And so it's pretty smart to have like them on opposite sides, so you're facing with the sun, so you're facing with the solar rays, you're facing the sun. And so, of course, the opposite side with the radiators doesn't face the sun, you can get effective and efficient cooling.
Right, so we didn't have that for the first version of Dragon, so we had
So you had
those
those
fold
unfolding.
out
Yeah, and there was.
solar panels.
I'm not sure if there were small radiators on board. There had to
Probably.
be. But, like,
Probably.
maybe in the trunk on the outside
Yes,
or so, but.
so, and then they decided that they don't need as much or as much power generation, so they opted for the smaller surface area of solar panels on the trunk,
And it's they're
and
pretty powerful actually, solar panels, yeah.
yeah.
And they had a lot of upgrades recently from the DM2 mission. They were pretty weak to solar panels, and were also only meant to work for like a month or so. Now they of course have to work longer, because we are now in regular crew missions, and they have to work long they have to work longer because the duration of them are around 6 months. And as well, there were also upgrades to the heat shield. I'm not sure if there were upgrades with this Dragon, but there were definitely upgrades after the DM2 mission. So yeah, the Dragon got updated a few things after the DM2 mission, so it's not like it was a finished product there. It just got a few things upgraded, and that's why we do those demo missions, to find things we still can upgrade. And you saw it, we got teacher upgrades, and they also changed things in the barometers to get better understanding of the height of the Dragon for the parachute deploy.
Right. And so this may sound like that the DM2 mission wasn't safe. It clearly was. That's
Yes.
it was clearly safe. It was just upgrades. So they realized during the DM2 mission that they might need to change that in order to make it even more safe, but it was still safe. So yeah, that's sometimes a concern for non-space nerds that oh those rockets aren't safe, and no, they clearly are. That's otherwise they wouldn't be used for human transportation.
Yeah, NASA, you have to really
But
say it. NASA's really, really careful with their astronauts and with
that's
their
right.
missions. So everything at NASA, so NASA missions, you can really be sure that they will work, because at NASA they really check everything until you can't, and they check everything into the smallest details. And I'm really confident with every NASA mission that it will go right. Like, I don't even think about, yeah, maybe if the Perseverance landing, maybe it will fail, but I was from the beginning like for 99% land, because this is NASA mission. NASA is so
Yeah.
precise with their missions, and so careful. They will nail it. And you see it with SLS, it takes long because they really, really take care about the safety of this vehicle. And I mean, SLS is already human rated, so.
Yeah. Even though it never flew, they don't have flight data on it. It is already, okay for human space travel. So, but they
Because like
still are going to
the single
perform.
paths were tested a lot, and
Yeah.
I mean it's basically
So,
like a space shuttle, just without a space
and
shuttle.
they still do an uncrewed test mission
Yes,
around the
but like
moon
there were actually
just
plans to
to
send
really make
astronauts.
sure just to really make sure that everything works and everything will be fine for humans to eventually go back to the moon after over 50 years.
Yeah,
But
there actually were plans to send astronauts on the first mission.
yeah.
But
Right. So
then
actually they wanted to send them right away, but then they said, "Ah, well,
maybe it's
let's
not
test
that good of
this.
an idea.
Yeah, let's test it one more time just because even if they abort it, it always is like, "Yeah, well, abort systems are great and all, the
I
astronauts are
mean,
going to
if
be
they
safe,
would
but
abort, it's like still bad for
the board
NASA
is
because
so violent.
the
It is actually expected to that the astronauts are getting injured because of the board, because they sometimes pull up to 15 to 20 G's for a short amount of time. So it's usually
Yes.
around 12 to 15 for a couple of seconds,
Like the
but
Soyuz
the
abort
initial force,
a few years
yeah.
ago didn't look that rough. Well, it was rougher, but
Yeah, but
the
it also wasn't the actual abort
yeah,
tower,
it was
the
like the
big
small
abort system.
thrusters
It
because they
was
were
the after
yes, there
stage
was a
separation.
fairing. They're like the Soyuz
Yeah.
system is like a double system. There's the launch abort tower, and then there are solid rocket motors on the
Backups.
fairing. That's protecting the
Right.
Soyuz spacecraft, and that
So
ran
they just
once.
jettisoned the tower a couple of seconds before
So
they
yeah,
before the
stage.
rocket decided to abort. And I think there was no injuries there,
No.
but it was really close. So
Yeah,
you
they
can
almost.
so 15 G's is usually the force. It's not comparable. You know, you usually black out at so the standard person blacks out at I think about 5 or 6 G's for a couple of seconds. That's the maximum. So there the peak forces are are uncomfortable, but a human can go higher than that. But 15 for a couple of seconds is hard. It's so incredibly violent, and when aborts are triggered, it's basically guaranteed that you'll get an injury at some point during the abort. And yeah, but it's still better than dying. That's why they put
Yeah,
in the abort.
definitely. Like, we're not really saying
So
ahead of the launch. Yeah, like, an abort would hurt me, so if something goes wrong,
yeah.
don't abort. I'd rather die. I don't think
Yeah,
anyone would say that, so.
no one would say that.
Yes.
And it's actually expected for them, or they have to take into account that they might not be able to walk, so that because they're so heavily, the body is put through so much
Like
violence and
it's really
force that's
that
just
high. So what do you mean with not to
so
walk?
it's
Like permanent for
so
their whole
it's
life
not
or
just a
like.
broken arm. They might have to sit in a wheelchair for the rest of their
Really?
lives because the body, yeah,
Okay.
it's so violent. Because it's not the force itself, because it's shaking and it's still very uncontrolled. And they might, hit their head or something, or the body smashed or something with something loose. So it's actually very, very dangerous to abort. But it's safe and you won't die. Probably.
Like how you said, yeah, it's very, very dangerous, but it's safe. But
Yeah,
very,
so
very
yeah,
dangerous.
it's a mixed message, but it's that injuries are very likely to occur, but you probably won't die.
We'll fill it in the coffin.
And we have seen the safety precautions of NASA because they actually in the Constellation program that was before Artemis, they had the
Would love the
idea
Constellation program.
of yeah,
But
it would have been
like
awesome.
abort system and Ares-1 were not the best
Yeah.
friends.
So yeah, that was actually what I wanted to
Super
go at.
bad.
So the Ares-1X was actually
Very, very cool rocket.
their idea of crew transportation. So you basically have to think of the Ares-1X as just one shuttled side booster stretched out
It's like an
just like
SLS
for
booster.
SLS, and then right, like an SLS booster, but no nose cone. Instead, it
Goes to center core and this main
opens
stage.
up, it gets bigger. And like, on top there's an Orion.
What was the opposite of the Eris one? Was that an L10, like in Centaur? I think it wasn't.
Yeah, I think it was. Atlas Centaur, I right? think it wasn't.
Like the Cid.
No, it wasn't in Centaur, but it was something flight proven. I'm not sure which upper stage it was, but it was something flight proven. So, and the Eris 1X had one launch, and it was just a test with a dummy upper stage with a dummy fifth segment of the booster.
Yeah, dummy Orion. And
so it launched, it had Miko. It's weird because it's just one solid rocket booster, so it's, I feel like Miko is it's the wrong word. But so they had Miko, they had stage separation. And then they just dropped into the ocean. So that was the mission. And this is exactly what happened. And then they realized, they looked at the cost, and the cost of the single launch was $475 million.
Oh, it was actually in J2 engine.
It was J2.
They want to use J2. That would have been awesome. Like to see Apollo hardware fly again. That would have been cool.
Yeah. So again, the launch cost of that single, not even orbital launch, was $475 million.
Cheap.
That is as much as a shuttle launch.
Wasn't a shuttle like
so? More, and then they realized, like, yeah.
So? Shuttle launch or more expensive?
No, it was just the launch cost. The assembly of the rocket and stuff and the development didn't go into that. It's just the launch cost.
Okay, yeah, shuttle costed 576 or 1.6 billion. Like between
yeah, it's between yeah, it's from... really depending yes. on the mission. But still, that's $500 million for it's just nothing. The launch. And then they realized, yeah, I mean, well, like, that's way too expensive.
It would be nothing like $500 million for Jeff Bezos. Yeah. Like, he earns that in a day, so
go ahead, do whatever you want.
Yes.
So, and the problem with the Eris 1 was that they realized that it is super, super unsafe for human travel. So they have a scale from 1 to 5, where 1 is very, very unsafe and not human rated at all, and 5 is the most safe, the safest vehicle ever, basically, which never was achieved, not even SLS. So an Eris 1 was, I think, 1.8. So, yeah,
very, like, very unsafe. You couldn't abort in a lot of situations because of the SRB. If you would have aborted,
yeah,
the SRB would have exploded and all the debris. Like, an SRB explosion is massive. I mean, look at Delta 2. Look at the
yeah.
Delta.
Or even if it didn't explode,
it would be true. The SRB plume could have burned the chutes and.
Yeah, so and then you would just free fall. You
didn't have a lot of options to abort in your trajectory. Like, there were a lot of zones where you couldn't abort. There were only a few phases in the trajectory where you could abort. So it was really, really unsafe. You couldn't.
Yeah. So there usually there's a chart for the different abort scenarios, and after that you decide whether you can abort or you can't. And there are those black zones where an abort is almost certain death. So, and usually you have very, very brief and very, very small black areas where it's unsafe to abort, and those are just splits of a second. So, and Eris 1 almost had none white spaces, so it was so unsafe to abort.
It was a cool rocket.
It was a cool rocket. Yeah, it looked awesome. Really, I really cool. liked the Eris.
Like, I don't know, a lot of people are hating it. Like, it was ugly, but I think it was looked pretty, pretty cool. Like, also the fact that they launched launch of the shuttle, they just could use this mobile launcher for the Eris 1. It was.
Yeah. So the Eris 1 had to launch from the shuttle mobile launcher because it was still in the shuttle days. It was 2009, and the shuttle was there until 2011. And so they had the hardware there, and so they, since it was only a single shuttle booster, they just stacked it on one spot of the solid rocket booster holdings, and then they just launched it. So yeah, the rollout looked pretty funny, very weird. So this is easily one of the most Kerbal looking rockets. Yes. I've ever I mean, this is something I would whip up in Kerbal in seconds just to get Kerbal into orbit or something. But I kind of miss those fancy, wild NASA days, because this is not even an idea anymore. You know, yeah, we're going to do SLS and that's it. There's no,
Constellation was
wait,
cool.
We could do this. Or, right, Constellation was still
we're going to
wild,
Venus now, so
fancy
I mean,
thing. Yeah.
Make us pretty happy right now.
That's true. NASA's going back to Venus.
I'm really looking forward
to that. I'm not prepared for that topic, so
yeah,
I have not much to add there.
About in the next episode. Let's just say
that's
like
right.
That. That's
right.
That's
will
for the next episode.
Do, yeah, I actually wanted to talk about that next week, but right now the news came a couple
yeah,
of days ago, and I just had not the
to
time to inform you properly.
And prepare something and then.
Yeah. So you will be hyped for that. So, should we move over to Starship or stay at Falcon 9?
I mean, like, Starship, that didn't much. Let's just talk about what happened in space this week. Like, what happened this week in space? So, I think that's a cool thing we could talk about more often in our podcast.
So we had SXM.
Let me just list up all the launches. In the last week, I would count this one. It was four launches. So we had the Long March 7 launching a Tianzhu 2. That was the cargo resupply. Supply for the Tianhe.
The cargo supply.
Yeah, the cargo supply for the Tianhe 1 station, the first stage of China. And then we had Fingen 4B. I think those were the weather satellites for China that launched on a Long March 3B. It was also a successful launch. And then we had a CRS-22, we talked about that. It was, of course, a Falcon 9 Block 5 launch from LC-39A, landed on, of course, Still Love You, and it actually came back to the port just yesterday and was a little bit tipping. It was pretty at an angle, so rough landing, rough seas. And then we had today, this early morning, we had SXM-8 launch, of course, also on the Falcon 9 Block 5, landed on GRTI, and it launched from Slick 40. Let's just talk about events that happened. Let's talk about what happens this next week. So, we actually already have two EVAs planned. So, it's on June 16th. So, it's actually in 2 weeks, but let's just list them up because nothing happens next week. We have the US EVA 74 and the EVA 75. They will place the new solar arrays that were carried on CRS-22. Then on Sunday, the June 27th, we will have Cygnus and NG-15 release. So the Cygnus spacecraft, also a resupply vehicle, will be undocking from the station, will be released, and then will deorbit and burn up. Then we'll have Progress MS-17 docking, but that's the future. Like, things we don't have a date right now is for the Dragon undocking, like CRS-22. It should occur in July, so we will still have some time. And of course, the whole Russian module reassembly will be there as well. And let's take a look at launches next week. There will be a really exciting launch, what I'm really looking forward to, and we'll hopefully get a webcast for it on June 13th. It's Launcher 1. Launcher 1's launch again, and it's a pretty big rocket. There are a few customers. Let me just get into the details here. We have STP, from the Air Force and the Department of Defense. Those are 11 small sets, 11 payloads for this customer. Then there's one payload for the Netherlands Air Force. Then there are two payloads for the Stork constellation. Those are two satellites, Stork 4 and 5. And yeah, it will be launching, of course, on Cosmic Girl, the S-747 of Virgin Orbit. And the Cosmic Girl will take off in Mojave Air and Spaceport in California. And yeah, the other launches will be the NRL 111. It will be an exciting time. I'm not sure. But it's a Monitor 1 launch. A Monitor 1 launch like for 14 years. Did launch for 14 years. So it's the first launch of Monitor 1 in 14 years or so. It's so pretty cool that we see this rocket again. Then we'll have Falcon 9 Block 5 launching GPS 3 5, so for the Space Force. And then we'll, in the future, it's still pretty far ahead. Oh, actually not. That's also on June 17th, on the same date as the GPS launch, which will, of course, be covered here on the channel. Yeah, it's the Long March Shenzhou 12. So we'll see astronauts or taikonauts launching to the Tianhe 1 station. That's pretty exciting. I'm looking forward to watch this one. So a human launch of 2 to 3 taikonauts. We don't know it yet how many, but yeah, there will be the first astronauts to the station. That's pretty exciting.
Great. Thank you for the update. I'll write everything down in the description, because that was quite the list.
Or you just look at weeklyspaceflight.com. We have listed all the upcoming launches there.
Right.
We have all the upcoming launches. We have news for you there. And we have articles. The first one will come up soon. It's about Starlink. Big stuff for that one. I'm working on with the writer. We will release it maybe today or maybe tomorrow. But look, but yeah, be aware of this one coming up. So...
Right, so just check out weeklyspaceflight.com to look everything up Marlon just talked about, and I will also put it in the description so you can read it afterwards. Great, so should we talk about the FCC orbital flight plan? We kind of forgot last week.
Let's just talk about it. So I actually can describe the flight plan a little bit, so should I just start? Like, I can tell where it's going over.
Yeah, sure.
And
go
then
ahead.
We'll just talk about how we think it's going to occur.
I can go into a little bit more detail because
it will
wrote everything down.
Yeah, I also have some sources here. So it will start, of course, at Boca Chica. Then we'll go at a roughly... So it's definitely a prograde orbit. It's pretty low inclination orbit. And yeah, it's going straight through Florida and over the Caribbean, like on the tip of Florida. It's going past there, and then it's then we'll splash down actually in Hawaii. So it won't do in complete orbit. So we don't actually know it yet. Is SN20 or probably SN20 will go into orbit, of if it will be in suborbital trip.
Right. So this document actually came out quite a while ago, and it is from the FCC, and they basically released the very first flight plan for the very first orbital flight attempt of Starship. So this will, of course, require a Super Heavy booster.
So it is like an exciting time to come up. So we have had all the suborbital flights now, those for launch. Five launches.
For landing.
Those five launches were always those exciting times where we always waited for hours and looked, testing, satisfies, and that was like on a hold in the last time, but that will start again with booster testing and Starship SN20 testing. So I would guess that Starship SN20 will be loaded on a test stand for static fires. And then Bean 2, don't like it that much, but yes, we call it, because it's a mix of Bean 2 and Bean 3. So
didn't he say booster 2?
Okay, that's just
I think he said booster 2, but it's technically BN3.
No, it's actually BN2-3, so it's having, it's half BN2, half BN3. It's like mixed, mixed things.
Wow, that's just all right. So just a booster.
So the second
and
booster
the
to
20.
Be the second full scale booster to be built. That will probably go into the orbital test stand, or maybe on a suborbital, but I don't think.
No, I don't think.
But it definitely will go undergo engine testing as well before being integrated with Starship. And yeah, what do you think? Will there be a payload? Will there be a dehinge? Or won't there be?
No, I'm very sure there won't be any hinge system or something. It's just the Starship we know already.
Just with
a lot more TPS tiles, I think.
So I'm really excited to see the first no-scoring TPS, actually.
Right.
I think like those are the most challenging parts where you have the tip.
So let me just talk you through the proposed flight plan. So, of course, it will lift off in Boca Chica. So Starship SN20 atop of a booster will, of course, you know, launch and then pitch downrange. And it'll actually take a fairly steep trajectory. And then 169 seconds into flight, it will have MECO, so main engine cutoff, and shortly after, it will have stage separation. So the two vehicles split apart and they basically go their separate ways. So SES, so second stage ignition, occurs right after stage separation. So the Starship continues onto orbit and the booster will actually perform something else, and it will do an RTS,
So
RTSL,
not
a
quite
return to
like
launch
in
site style
like yeah
landing.
it's style, so it will probably be like doing
Well, so it will boost back. It will boost back and it will splash or touchdown. We don't know yet.
like
Right.
it's landing in water.
About approximately 20 miles offshore. So now I am wondering if they will try to, if there will be any means of reusing or recovering it at
Like
least.
recovering,
Because we've
yes,
seen
like
this
getting
with
the
Falcon
hardware, but I
9.
don't think can be reused. Also, what now at this point say rest in peace to the Raptors, because I don't think they will survive salt water.
No,
And
they
like, I don't
won't,
know why they're
probably.
going for that. Of
So,
course, for safety, I know, but why are they not even trying, even
yeah,
trying
but
to do a drone
Elon
ship
said that
there?
they can.
Because you know those are 28 Raptors. I mean, yeah, sure they're getting
Yeah,
up
but Elon said they can pump out a Raptor every
but
2 days, was
still
it?
28 Raptors, like let's say like
Yeah. So, I
28.
mean, that's a lot of money and a lot of Raptors just going into the water, but yeah, still. But so the document is pretty clear about what the Starship will do. But so the document is pretty clear on where the Starship is going to end up, but I'll
Yes.
get to that in a moment. Just the booster will boost itself back, and it will end up 20 miles offshore. That's at least what the document said. So the document isn't clear on how or what is going to happen with the booster. Presumably, they just touch it down and it'll tip over, just like we saw with the early Falcon 9 landing attempts, where they just boosted it back to the shore and softly touched it down on or in the ocean, and it just tipped over and sometimes broke and sometimes survived. It changed. So, and they can, you know, pick it up or tow it back or something, just to get the debris mostly cleared. And yeah, that's so much for the booster. So, but now the Starship will boost itself further into orbit. It's but unfortunately, or no, not unfortunately, but it won't reach a full orbit. So it will be pretty close to an orbit, you know, from the trajectory, but it won't complete a single orbit. So it will splash down. This is what the document clearly states. It will splash down around an Hawaiian island,
Yes,
so
just north
way
of
offshore,
Hawaii.
of course. But yeah, so it will splash down, so it won't reach Boca Chica again, which technically isn't an orbital attempt,
See,
but
there's like
it
it's like
still
mixed.
technically
It could be
is.
an orbital attempt, but they go in
Yeah,
orbit and then
it's
deorbit.
hard to describe.
So they maybe could go
That's
complete
right.
orbital
So
velocity and then deorbit, or it's just a suborbital trip because. When it's like an apogee
yeah,
that's
I
pretty low
think.
and intercepting the atmosphere, I wouldn't say it's in stable orbit. Like it's sort of orbit-ish, but like for me, incomplete orbit is and real orbit is when you can orbit the Earth and not when you will.
That's right. So it's hard to define what Starship is actually going to do. I think we just have to wait and
Yeah,
see.
I'll say
But
it will be
the main.
suborbital, just like Jim Dodd said.
Yeah, same.
So.
Same. So, what they're trying to achieve is, of course, bring Starship further. But what are they actually
Re-entry
trying to
testing
get data on?
GTVS.
And that is re-entry
And of
testing.
course the booster,
That's
like
right. So.
how do 28 Raptor engines work together and how do 28 Raptor engines hold
Yeah,
up?
well, honestly, I think they don't care about the Raptors because like not I
Raptors,
know
like
that
the booster.
Those
like how would
will
the booster system work? With
work.
Crit fans
yeah.
and boost Big Burn. Like the whole
Still,
structure.
I
how
think
will it
they
hold
know
up
how
with
it
entry?
works.
Maybe they learn. Okay, we will need to do an entry burn. Maybe they will do an entry burn. Then they will notice. Okay, we don't really need an entry burn. We can do it without them and get more delta V out of it. Like they will learn a lot of those
yeah, so it's
of
just
those flights. They will learn a
gathering
lot,
experience.
Yes, and they will also learn. They can improve
so.
With a flight because they will learn. And we just got
that's
information
right.
like yesterday or so. Like there was always a discussion: will Starship S20 have RVAX or like Tim Dodd likes to call it, RAPVAX? And it looks like it because we saw the thrust dome of SN20 and it has three Raptor engine mounts for vacuum. But what I notice is that there are no sea level Raptor engine mounts. Like there are not those plumbing things sticking
okay.
out for the sea level locks. So maybe it will be added or
yeah,
they
I mean,
what I think could actually be happening is that they just put a sea level Raptors on the RAPVAC mounts to test like the mounting position and what force on the hull at those positions make and just put the sea level Raptors there.
So,
they'll flip with that
the
configuration.
The document doesn't go into detail on the velocity, so we can't figure out what trajectory it's going to take or how fast it's going to go. But, so it's really trying just the re-entry. So they need to go near orbital velocity. But do they really need sea level engines if they're not trying to land?
I understand it like they want to land. They won't land, but land in water. But maybe...
It clearly says splashdown and the booster is going to touch down. So what I understand as a splashdown is it'll just... belly flop
like, but I don't know
ocean.
Why where the sense is like why would they just waste it like I mean why wouldn't they just
yeah,
try to end it but of course yeah if
right.
if it really is the plan that would make sense that we don't see sea level
because
amounts.
this is as far as I'm understanding the document and this is my own interpretation but the booster says touchdown and the ship splashed
yeah,
down
we'll see maybe
as a touchdown right. But as a touchdown, I understand that I am imagining that the booster will fly down to the ground and it'll softly touch down on the water and it'll tip over and it'll break. But the ship, they're not trying to do the transition to vertical and landing attempt. I don't think so, which is why they could hold the Raptors, the sea level Raptors, and only put vacuum Raptors on there. This is what
yeah,
I would say because they can
be,
add.
That could be right as well, but yeah, we'll see it. I don't feel like the Raptors there are Vex already yet because like the last time Elon mentioned RevVex or RVex, they were like at SN2 testing at McGregor and like SN1 died. I'm not sure, but I think had experienced the rat. So yeah, I don't know how far they are. That would be a pretty cool thing. So
well, I think we just have to wait
so,
and
yeah,
see and check out what the future holds.
Just said as well that it will do a flip and tail down, and soft ocean landing. So
yeah,
that would mean that it
we'll
needs
just have
that
to
it
see.
Will need sea levels because the RVX we know it they can't gimbal, and there's also no space in the skirt for the
RVX. Yeah,
RVX.
But do they really have to gimbal
for the flip? Of course.
I mean, if they. Yeah, for the flip, of course, but if let's pretend that they're not gonna do a flip, so they don't necessarily
need
the gimbaling.
Yeah, but like for landing, if they really would do like the tail down maneuver, they will definitely need sea levels. So even though if the Raptors could gimbal mounts, they're just not that too big. They're so close to the skirt, there's no room for them to gimbal. They're on the outside and they have big nozzles. There's just no room.
They can't. I mean, they could.
They could, but they could gimbal like 1 degree or so. And that's just.
Yeah,
and
they. And
also,
could
you have to figure that they're pretty far out of the rocket and not that in the inside.
Right,
so they
right.
have
so
least litter and.
Those are
that,
really.
That just makes zero sense for them to gimbal. So that's why also SpaceX decided to have them fixed.
So they're just for for engines to have in a vacuum.
Yes, just to have a better efficiency.
Yeah, so that's the FCC document, pretty much.
Yeah, I would
so,
say that,
I'll
that
put
probably
a link.
Could wrap up our episode. We're recording now for 45 minutes.
Really?
54 minutes, my recording.
Sure.
So, yeah.
I mean, I could go a little longer, but I don't mind stopping here.
Yeah, but
here.
Like maybe it's
so,
maybe it's a little too detailed, you know.
Yeah, we don't have anything to talk about
yes,
anymore.
But like I'm
so,
really excited for next episode next week for because
oh,
I really
yes.
Really want to learn more about the Venus mission. I will read a lot about it and write some texts for next episode so we can talk about a lot there.
Right.
And of course we'll have exciting things to talk about as well. And maybe we'll have more information
so,
on the China crew launch, like who will be launching there. That's something we could talk about there as well, if we have the information until then.
Especially how many people.
Yes. And like there are exciting
so,
times, and we could talk about BN2 testing that will occur. That will occur in the following
yes.
days and what happened at Boca Chica, because last week there didn't really happen anything. But we'll have to something to talk.
Well, we had the mounts of the top
yeah,
caps,
but they're
but
like
really just preparation.
Yeah, like but we'll definitely have
yeah.
to something to talk about in the next episode
right,
in
right.
Boca Chica
so
because something happens
next
this week.
Week is gonna be cool.
Yes.
All right. So I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Make sure to check out our Twitters. They will be in the description. It's for me. It's at Philips SpaceX and Marlon. It's I'm actually
Marlon
not sure
underscore
honestly do you, right Marlon underscore Midbay. So just check us out, you know, there's the official weekly spaceflight Twitter, it's just at weekly spacecast,
and of course check
make
out
sure
our
to
YouTube channel we're posting
right subscribe on our
we're
YouTube channel
we're hosting almost every launch, like of course there's some launch like the NRO 111 launch you can't host that because we're both in school, but we'll host
right.
every launch we can, and it's always fun in the stream, so join them and we'll have a lot of fun, I promise you. And we'll of course for every launch I'll edit the like a small recap for launch with some music and the highlight shots, maybe shots that look pretty cool for launch. So yeah, also for launches we don't broadcast or don't host, but yeah, make sure to subscribe and yeah, just look forward to all the recaps that are coming up, and yes.
We're really trying our best to give you the best content possible, so please show your appreciation, and of course feedback is always
yes, even,
even
if
nice
it's negative
feedback,
even,
if you say,
even
bad feedback.
We always want to improve ourselves,
right,
so if you say, yeah, maybe you could do
right.
that better, that wasn't like that, you know, in a podcast, like, there are a few things, maybe if you say, okay, the podcast is like too... It feels too long. It feels a boring,
too
like
detailed.
A bit, a little shorter.
Yeah,
so it
just
feels,
tell
just
us.
Tell us. Don't feel shy. Just tell us. We always appreciate feedback. If you can do something better, we'll do it better. And we always want to improve. And so yeah, we can't. We only can improve with your feedback. And but we got a lot of feedback in the last video, so I'm sure you're gonna do it.
Right.
Really, really big thanks for your cool and great feedback and all your support in the last days. Like YouTube channel's now out for 2 days or so, and we already are at 24 subscribers, and we have great feedback on the videos, and we had like in the launch stream 7 viewers at a time, and that's one channel that's only 2 days old. It's pretty cool. And of course, join our Discord. It's always fun there. We had today. We had
right.
It was
right.
a lot of hours here with
we
the
had
community.
A lot of
like,
hangout.
With people,
yeah.
with a lot of different people, it's always pretty fun here. Like share KSP stuff, you know. We know you all play KSP, like every space no place
right.
plays KSP. So yeah, share your KSP stuff or other stuff. It's just always a fun time to hang out or discuss with other people. It's always a fun time, and hear people that understand you and will always have fun together.
Right. So, thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.